League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, November 27th, 2017. It is 3:25 a.m. as Tom Silverstein and I record this episode of the Packers podcast. It is very, very late, and I'd like to get some sleep, but that's not going to happen because we're going to talk about the Green Bay Packers falling to the Pittsburgh Steelers 31-28 on a game-winning 53-yard field goal by Chris Boswell. Tom, wake up. Wake up.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm here.
So, what do we make of all this? It was a game that they were two touchdown underdogs, the Packers were. They come out and they play, obviously, markedly better than that. And then in the end, it doesn't really matter, and they drop to 5-6.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Their season's over. I think you can go through all the different scenarios, but in order to for them to even have a chance at the playoffs, I think they had to win this game. Yeah, McCarthy got him ready to play. He got Hundley, whatever they've been finally teaching him or working with him, they got him to stay in the pocket. They got him to throw on some rhythm. They smartly got the ball to Jamal Williams a lot. And the defense couldn't stop Ben Roethlisberger, but they had three turnovers, and that could have been the difference in the game. They needed one more. They needed one more get off the field. It's going to come down to the game came down to a lot of ifs, plays, you know, if things could have happened this way or that way, if McCarthy had made this decision or that decision. But that's how most NFL games go. And at best, you know, I think McCarthy found that when his team, he absolutely needed it, his team didn't quit on him. So that's about the best you can pull from that game.
Yeah, I think at this point, so they're 5-6, and if they wanted to make the playoffs, I think they got to get to 10-6, or at least, I don't think 9-7 gets in.
I don't even think 10-6 makes it.
Really? Okay. Yeah. So even if they did want to go in at 10-6, they'd need to win out.
Right.
And that means Hundley would have to beat the Bucks and Browns, which I think is doable, and then it would mean Rodgers would have to come back and beat the Panthers, Vikings, and Lions in that order. And
yeah,
even if Rodgers comes back, I still don't think they beat the Vikings.
I don't think they come back. I wouldn't think he'd come back from the Panthers. I think that's a little early.
And I don't think Hundley can beat the Panthers.
Yeah, probably not. And even if Rodgers comes back, there's no guarantee that they can win either versus Minnesota against Detroit. You know, there's certain things that could fall into place. Minnesota could have the division clinched and not necessarily play everybody or whatever, but it doesn't matter. It really, I don't think they're going anywhere this year. They had their chance. They had their chance to come out of this 6-5, and that would have given them a legitimate hope of making the playoffs, especially coming off that kind of performance. But now I don't know how they bounce back from those.
So what to you was the biggest reason why they lost this game? And I know my reason, so I'll let you go first and then I'll share mine. But why do you think that they came out on the short end of this in a game where Hundley actually played pretty well and they actually did, you know, have some semblance of an offense?
Well, they were playing a team with, for one, is a Super Bowl contender. Number two has a special player in Antonio Brown. He is what everybody wants, and someone who's a difference maker. And he changes, tilts the field to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think that was a big reason. I mean, I think you can point to little individual things. McCarthy going for that ridiculous 57-yard field goal was a mistake. Some miscommunication at the end when on that last drive when they were going for 2 minute and then they're not going for 2 minute all of a sudden after Hundley takes the hit in the head. I don't know. I think that's some special teams gaffes. I really think it came down to Antonio Brown is just a better player, and Le'Veon Bell is. Those two guys are better than anybody the Packers have.
That's where I was going to go with it, is Antonio Brown. And I know that, you know, it's unreasonable perhaps to expect anybody to be able to shut him down because of how good he is. But I've only been covering this team 3 years, and it goes back to that. Without Sam Shields, they've never found anyone that can cover these number one guys to a legitimate level. And I'm looking at Antonio Brown's game log, and of course he's got huge games against a lot of teams, but he was also held to 5 for 62 by Xavier Rhodes. Mm-hmm. He was held to 4 for 34 by whoever covered him in Baltimore, probably Jimmy Smith, mm-hmm. I imagine. Mm-hmm. 4 for 65 with the Bengals. That was probably either Pac-Man or Kirkpatrick. Mm-hmm. 5 for 70 with the Lions with Darius Slay.
Yep.
And then 3 for 47 against the Colts with, would that have been Vontae Davis maybe?
Maybe.
So, anyway, my point is that there are teams out there that have found ways. I mean, that's five teams that have held him to under 70 yards. The Packers didn't have to hold him under 70, but why can they not keep number one receivers, whether it's him or Julio Jones or Marvin Jones?
Yeah.
Why can't they keep these guys to anything reasonable?
Well, tonight they needed a pass rush to back up some of that coverage.
Yep.
I thought they kind of erred. And probably at some point should have put Randall on him full time since he was playing the best of any of their corners. Randall knows how to play in the slot, and he probably should have followed him around with some help. They did a nice job, and they do a nice job of getting Antonio Brown free. And I don't know who you can fault on that catch he had at the end of the game, the last. Yeah. I mean, that was just
superhuman
world catch. I mean, there's nobody who can beat that. You know, the cover two beater for the 33-yard touchdown was a heck of a throw. You know, House could have done some things better, could have tried to prevent an outside release from Brown, but it was just a great throw. You know, sometimes guys, it's their day. I just think pressure is the one way you get to Roethlisberger, and it's probably the one thing that they could not do was get pressure on him.
They didn't have Clay Matthews. He was held out with a groin injury, so it was essentially Ahmad Brooks, Nick Perry, Kyler Fackrell, and Vince Beagle. And Nick Perry, I'm looking at the stat sheet, one assisted tackle.
Yeah,
that's it.
He does not show up when he has to face someone, a starter, you know, an established starter. For whatever reason, he's good at beating up backups and things like that, but when it comes to really dominating, you know, a really established guy, he can't do it. And Villanueva had him most of the night.
Makes me wonder what Ted Thompson and Russ Ball think of the money that they dished out for Perry, knowing that, you know, he's going to have two or three games a year where he has three sacks, mm-hmm. and that seems to be it this season. He hasn't forced a lot of fumbles. He's been solid against the run, like he always is. But, I mean, tonight even, Le'Veon Bell, he's got one tackle, an assisted tackle.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
Yeah, it wasn't a great night for him. I thought the guy they missed the most was Kenny Clark.
Yes.
Because the one thing they couldn't do was get pressure up the middle. They just could not. The way you get at Roethlisberger is up the middle. Around the edges is not going to get him because he's so good at stepping up in the pocket.
Yep.
And,
but if you have stuff in your face, you can't step up in the practice.
Yeah, and you have to have a guy at least getting a little bit of push on the center, and their center is really good, Pouncey. And so having the combination of Clark and Daniels makes them a lot better team, and they're not getting push with Quentin Dial and Mike Daniels, or, you know, not enough with Dean Lowry and Daniels. So that was a key loss, not having Kenny Clark.
I didn't notice this until just now. Blake Martinez had 15 tackles tonight.
Yeah, and like about 12 missed tackles, too.
Yeah, Le'Veon Bell made them all look silly at one point. I mean, he juked. I can think of Martinez. I can think of Clinton Dix. I can think of Burnett. I mean, his ability to just stop and start and change direction was really impressive. And I don't know what his final... Okay, so what did he finish with? 20 carries for 95 yards plus 12 catches for 88 yards. Mm-hmm. So you're talking 170, 185 total yards, 183 total yards.
Yeah.
On a day when, you know, Jamal Williams played pretty well, but he comes up with 135 combined.
Mm-hmm.
135. And so, like you said, I think in this case, it might be as simple as they just had two players that were better than anything the Packers could do.
Absolutely. Two guys who tilt the field. The Packers only have one guy who does that, and he wasn't playing on Sunday. So, they just don't have superstars. Other than Rodgers, and the Steelers have three, so you know that made the big difference in the game. And I don't know, I don't know that Rodgers could have won this game for them. Hundley played about as good as you could play. You know, he took a couple of bad sacks on that one of those late drives, but. You know, he didn't throw any interceptions. He threw three touchdowns. He didn't make too many stupid plays. Made a few plays with his legs. You know, played a lot better than he had been.
So now that the Packers are in a position where they're almost certainly out of the playoffs, what is the... Maybe the Packers won't think that way because they'll just want to hope and claw at every possible scenario. But
and they should.
What are some of the things that they can try and do over the next 5 to 6 weeks if they are eliminated from the playoffs? What can you use this time for a franchise that is not experienced in a situation where they're out of it so early?
Yeah, well, one thing I think they need to do, even though Kevin King had a terrible game, they need to start working him in and replacing Devon House, because I don't think House is going to be here next year. And so King needs to become their main starter, and Randall obviously is going to be one of their starters as well, and get those guys going and start to maybe look at some of the other younger corners and get them some playing time, get them used to playing. Same with Vince Beagle, get him on the field a little bit more. Montrevious Adams did today. You know, he's just not ready. I mean, I think it's not going to be till next year before they get anything out of him, but it doesn't hurt to play him.
And on the offensive side of the ball, get Devontae Mays in there a little bit. I'd like to see Jonmo Allison, too, because if they're going to have to make a decision about either Cobb, Adams, or Nelson, you know, you want to be confident that Jonmo can do it week to week, I think. So I'd like to see him a little bit more. And, you know, we got to see Jason Spriggs. That's an area they're going to evaluate to decide what they want to do.
I did not see that coming.
Neither did I.
And I think he actually did all right.
Yes.
I think he was pretty solid. I'll go back and look at some of his run blocking, but I know there were a lot of times there were no free rushes, or not many, coming from his side. So, I thought that was pretty impressive.
If the season totally goes off the rails here, any changes to be expected, coaching-wise or front office-wise, do you think, in the offseason? I know that's something that we'll talk about a lot over the next 5-6 weeks, but people say, you know, is McCarthy going to be gone? Is Thompson going to be gone? I say no to both of those, but if you look at the assistant coaches, I think that's where there could be change.
Yeah, I still think this could be the year that Capers finally gets the axe. I think they kind of need a fresh look on defense. It's
fresh from the outside or fresh from the inside?
Fresh from the outside, I think. I think they need to find... I don't think they need to change defenses. I mean, I think they still want to be a 3-4 defense. That's how they're built. And you don't want to all of a sudden just... all of a sudden you have to rebuild to a 4-3 and get rid of all these outside linebackers. So I would look for someone younger who has a track record. I'm not sure who that is. We'll find out more about that as the offseason comes around. But that's a potential change they could make.
In your experience, when coordinators come in or out, whether it's offense or defense, do they tend to change a lot of the assistants as well? I'm not experienced in that
area. Depends on who they are. Like a Capers, who's been around forever, has all these relationships with guys, and he brings them, you know, he brought in Kevin Green and Darren Perry and a lot of these guys that he knew. But McCarthy already had Winston Moss. He had Joe Witt. He had Turgovic. Turgovic was his friend. So I think you'll see, if they do make a change, it depends. It depends if the guy's a younger guy or if he's somebody who's more established, who's been around. You know, if it were like a Wade Phillips or something like that, he would have assistants he would want to bring in.
So that's one thing to keep an eye on is whether or not, you know, this could be the end for Capers. On the offensive side of the ball, I don't think that there would be much to change there, because I think that, you know, some of the positions where there's been young guys, like I actually think Ben Sermons has probably done a pretty darn good job this season.
I think he has too, yeah.
And I think that, you know, people will point to Angelico maybe and say, well, they don't get much out of the tight end position. But I tend to think that based on what we see in practice and the way that he interacts with everybody, I tend to think that's more of a talent thing than a coaching thing.
Probably. Yeah.
They're not going to change their O-line with James Campen.
No. Nope.
They're not going to change receivers probably with Getsy, because I think they kind of like what he's done there. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what they do with Edgar Bennett. First of all, I don't really know what Edgar Bennett does. And I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that in a genuinely, I don't know what he does a whole lot of the time.
Yeah. I think he does a lot of the things that make McCarthy's life a lot easier.
Okay.
He scripts practice. He does a lot of breakdown of the opposition. He oversees the other coaches, makes sure that everything is covered. And I know he's really good at that. I know he's really good at making sure that everyone knows what tendencies are and breaking down film and should they work on this, should they work on that. I think he's pretty valuable from that point. I think does the same thing that Tom Clements did for a while there, and Joe Philbin did. That's an important position. Only McCarthy knows inside whether there's someone there not doing their job or having a negative effect. But I don't see a big wholesale change. I don't see anything happening to McCarthy, and I don't see anything happening with Thompson.
No, I agree. I think he's going to be here for another season. And one of the things that he and Russ Ball and others will be deciding on is what they want to do with some of their unrestricted guys. And I know that it's far away from free agency, but this is often the time when maybe one guy gets a deal done or an extension or something like that. And so with the three big ones that they have, you know, you have Devontae Adams, Corey Linsley, and Morgan Burnett. At this point, do you think there'll be any action on any of those guys before the season ends?
No.
Really?
I don't think anything will happen. Adams will go all the way up to free agency.
You think he'll hit the market?
He might, but they'll try hard to re-sign him. They'll do one of their typical things, which is they wait till the last minute, you know, make Adams choose. He'll go on the market for a little bit, maybe, or they sign him right at the last minute. Linsley, you know, they might make a move on Linsley.
I could see him trying to get that one done.
He stayed healthy all year. They don't really have a center. You know, McCray could do it or Patrick could do it, but really you want to keep Linsley around, so I could see them trying to get that done. And who was the other we talked about? Burnett. I think they'll just... That could get done in January or February.
You think they'll bring him back?
They might.
I kind of think he's done.
Yeah, his injuries really worry you. The fact that he can't stay on the field. But, I mean, he's a really well-conditioned athlete. And he's, you know, well-schooled in their defense. I think they'll offer him a certain amount, but they won't go crazy on him. I don't think they'll not offer him. I'd be really surprised if they did.
Fair enough. And, you know, as people can tell who are listening to this, there's not a whole lot to talk about from the game, so we're sort of straying into more abstract topics here.
There's a few things that, you know, I think we could address that. Field goal, I think that was really
the 57-yard
decision. Yeah,
there had never been longer than a 53-yard field goal made at Heinz Field.
Right, the longest was by the Cowboys kicker.
Folk?
No.
Oh, Dan Bailey.
Dan Bailey.
And then Boswell tied it.
And then Boswell tied it. Yeah. So McCarthy does like to err on the side of aggressiveness, but you had a chance to pull one out of there. And I think that's actually what he was thinking, was we have a chance to win this game, and if I lose it because of being conservative, then I'll kick myself. But I really think at that point that was a smart play. You know, you had so much, they had so much momentum on their side at that point that missing a field goal from that long and giving up a touchdown just wiped out all that momentum.
Trying to figure out when that was.
It was end of the third quarter. It was with...
So it was 4 minutes left in the third quarter.
Yeah, Crosby and they had just picked off... Martinez had just picked off Roethlisberger.
Right, and so Crosby misses from 57 yards, and the Steelers take over at their own 47-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
Six plays later, they're in the end zone after the one-yard fade route to Antonio Brown.
Yeah, and then they held the Packers to three and outs on the next two series, and it's because they're, you know, the crowd got back into the game, the defense was all fired up. All of that, I think, was partially responsible because of that missed field goal. It just gave the Steelers new life. And I think he should have played the percentages there.
At one point during the game, it was when Hundley was leading them on that drive, that 12-play 77-yarder late in the game where Williams punched it in. I turned to our colleague Pete Doherty and I said, any chance they go for two here? Just say, screw it. We'll go for the win. Our season's probably over anyway. Is McCarthy the type to ever do something like that, to just go for the win
on
a two-point play?
Well, on the road, that's when you would do it. You better have one hell of a good play planned. And I don't know if he used up that play on Williams' touchdown, because that was a really nice play when he scored, or what. But I don't know. He probably could have tried. I think he thought there wasn't that much time left. And it wasn't like...
208.
So... I guess that's a pretty decent amount of time, but not a ton. Yeah, that would have been interesting. He would have been, well, in the end, it wouldn't have mattered. Either way, he lost. So, I don't know, but he would have been second-guessed on that, too.
Anything else you want to talk about specifically from the game? I'm trying to think of other things that, caught my attention.
The other thing that was interesting was the last series. So, what happened was on... first down, Hundley got sacked by T.J. Watt.
Right.
And they were in 2 minutes, but Hundley kind of got shaken up a little bit, so...
Helmet to helmet was what everybody said.
And McCarthy was adamant that that was a helmet-to-helmet hit and wanted the call, but he was checking to make sure that Hundley was okay, and then there was some miscommunication. They went out of 2 minutes after that. After he got hurt, and Jamal Williams really didn't know that that had occurred. There was some confusion because he was checking on Hundley to see if he was okay. They were arguing the call, and so Williams took that, was it second down?
Yeah.
Took that play out of bounds.
Yes.
And stopped the clock, and they had gone out of 2 minutes and were playing for overtime at that point, and Williams didn't get the message. So that's, you know, that's on coaching, but it's also circumstance. You know, there's a lot of things going on at that time. You know, if the helmet-to-helmet gets called, it's going into overtime. And
did you see a replay of it?
I did, yeah.
Is it legitimate?
Yeah, it was head-to-head. It was. I don't know if it was tough to call or not. You know, the speed of the game... it's hard. It makes some calls pretty hard. But, you know, the way they protect quarterbacks, It was pretty...
Yeah, that's pretty...
It was pretty flagrant, yeah.
I just pulled up a screenshot of it, and you can see that, you know, Watt's face mask goes into the top of Hundley's helmet.
Yeah. Now, whether that's, you know, he does have his head up, and Hundley is ducking his head, and the fact that he's a runner, I think, at that point, may affect whether that's head-to-head. I don't know exactly, because I know runners can... You can have head-to-head contact with a runner.
Yeah, that's what it says here, that Hundley was viewed as a runner, I guess, in that situation.
Yeah.
To clarify the hit, this is from an NFL referee account. It says, to clarify the hit on Hundley, a passer is not the QB, but a player in the act of passing. Even though he's in the pocket, he's not a defenseless player since he's trying to evade tackles and gain yards. There are quarterback protections, but none of those were violated on this play. I don't know if I buy that, but...
Yeah, you know, he's still behind the line of scrimmage. It's a sack. He was in a passing posture. I don't know if that makes a difference or not, but... Either way, it didn't get called. You know, if Williams doesn't get out of bounds, Pittsburgh has to use a timeout. They still might have won it anyways. But I thought that was a little bit interesting that they were kind of discombobulated after that hit.
So I know that, you know, Antonio Brown is a freak, as we discussed, but 17 seconds and the Steelers get the ball on their own 30-yard line and they set up a field goal. Is that... I know it's Antonio Brown, and I know Roethlisberger's really good, but is that inexcusable?
No. I mean, that catch he made was just... It's a one-in-a-million catch. It was like the Super Bowl with...
Santonio Holmes.
Santonio Holmes. You know, it's like you play good coverage, and he makes a catch like that, gets his foot down. That was absolute. I mean, his right foot is an inch at the most from the sideline, and his left barely drags the turf, and he still catches it with no movement on the ball. That, I don't know how you stop that. I think that's just a phenomenal play, and that's a difference maker. You know, that's what pay those kind of guys for.
So that got the ball to the Green Bay 47.
Yeah.
And then they still had the back shoulder to Brown for 14 more.
Yeah, that one hurt.
That was uncontested almost.
Yeah.
King was not even really in a position to try and make a play.
Yeah,
on that.
That one, you know, you put it on a rookie. You try to double him, and there's certain things they can do, crossing routes and things like that. And still, you know, it seemed like they still had him in a decent position, because then Bell loses 3 yards,
yep,
on that, and that could have been the difference, but it wasn't. So I don't know. You can blame them for that, but at the end of the game, really good quarterbacks make really good plays, and so do really good wide receivers.
So their next game would be against the Buccaneers a week from yesterday now. I am very curious to see how the Packers respond to this,
mm-hmm,
because most of them are smart enough to realize their season is over, and most of them probably know that no matter how hard they try, they could win the rest of their games, and it probably wouldn't mean a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
So if there was ever a time for guys to not try as hard or quit or just maybe not put as much effort in as, mm-hmm, as they have been, this would be it. And, you know, Tampa's a pretty bad team. They've got the 32nd ranked defense in the league, but they have put up some points on teams offensively. And so, I don't know. I'm just sort of curious to see what they do against a team that has no business beating them at Lambeau Field and whether or not they care.
Right. And, well, you know, the other aspect of it is, just because Hundley had one good game doesn't mean that he's going to consistently have good games. And
true,
he has to have a good game every game for them to win. And I'm not sold that he's going to come out and throw for 3 touchdowns and no interceptions again next week.
And don't forget, two of them were brutal coverages. You know, the one with Cobb where he was wide open,
mm-hmm,
and then Adams toasted whoever that was,
yeah,
Cody Sensabaugh, so
you
badly.
Have to give Hundley part of that credit for the pump fake.
Yes,
on
that's
that.
True.
You know,
that's
that was
true.
Just a good play. So yeah, he has to come back and play like that again, and that's not a guaranteed. And even if they win the next two, they still, the combined 7-6 record of those last three teams was, 23-10 or something like that, 25-10. So either way, it's unlikely they do anything. But, you know, I was around in 2010 when they had this kind of game against New England, and then they won their last two and went on to win the Super Bowl. It's possible to get some momentum off of a loss. We'll see whether McCarthy can pull that off.
So be sure to check out all of our coverage on JS Online and PackersNews.com. It is now a couple minutes shy of 4 a.m. We're not going to get any sleep, but I have to go and take a shower or do something to...
Yeah, pack.
Yeah, pack, because we need to be at the airport in about 50 minutes. So by the time you guys listen to this podcast, we'll already be on the airport. We'll already be at the airport, excuse me. So thank you guys very much for listening. Check out all of our coverage, as I mentioned, and we will talk to you guys soon.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.